This is CliffCentral.com. Yeah, baby. Yeah. Another absolutely fantastic day. Of course, this is the Unplugged and In Charge radio show. Thank you so much for listening in. Thank you very much for being part of it. This is, of course, the time where we just have a chat about, you know, things that are upbuilding in one way or the other. We talk about careers. We talk about people who are doing major things, who are on the way to big success. And that these are the type of things that really help us all make the changes necessary in our own lives to, you know, to become better, to grow, to be more in whatever space and in whatever way possible. Because that's important. It's important to keep on working on yourself and finding out from other people, what are they doing right? You know, what are those magic formulas, if it is magic after all? But what is that one thing that helps other people really excel and progress and propel themselves to new heights every single time? Because it is you just taking the right ingredients from different people that actually helps you become better at what you do as well. It's absolutely fantastic. And tonight, why am I saying tonight? Yabona guys, I didn't actually sleep. I must just be honest. I had like 3 hours of sleep only because I was in Mahikeng. Then I had to come straight from Mahikeng to here to make it done time for the morning. I first had to train somebody. And then when the training finished, I had to rush over to Cliff Central. So it's been a rough couple of hours. But hey, man, we're out here. And today we have the one and only Trevor Gumby. I think we need to one day make it like a, you know, a James Bond thing. Like, what's your name? My name is Trevor. Trevor Gumby. Or maybe...
Gumby. Trevor Gumby. Yeah, like that. Yeah, like that. That would be dope.
Right? Right?
Yeah. But I'd make an awful secret agent, man.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
I talk too much.
Secret agent Trevor Gumby, but he's not keeping any secrets.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Oh, wow. Man, it's a great pleasure to have you in the studio. In fact, an honor. I mean, you've done the most, and you've built this career from rock bottom, and look where you are now.
Dude, thank you so much for having me, man. I'm really excited to be here, man. You're talking big things.
Yeah. We're talking big things
big
now,
things,
Baba.
Bro.
Big things popping,
nice.
Little things stopping.
Nice.
Yeah. So tell me, Trevor, before we even talk about the big things,
right.
what I always like to talk about is you know, the smaller things. Well, we believe that the big shots are the small shots who never stop shooting.
Oh, wow. That's so profound.
Yeah. That's so there's nice. Once upon a time where Trevor was not Trevor Gumby. You were just Trevor Gumby. And
I want the accent change when you say Trevor.
So let's go to that time when you were still just, you know, the ordinary Joe. And tell me, how was a normal day in Trevor's life?
All right. I still consider myself pretty ordinary because I do ordinary things. My life is not really glamorous. But back in the day, before I started in entertainment, my day would just be like, I used to live in Windsor mm-hmm. West. And I used to get up, have breakfast, walk to work. I worked at Creston Mall. I worked at a clothing store there, YDE. And I just spend my whole day in there. I walk over to the Checkers for lunch, eat in the parking lot, and then back home again.
Wow.
It was very ordinary.
Just
very
a
mundane.
Very ordinary, yeah. Mundane day. What were you doing at the workplace? What was your responsibility?
It was YDE.
Yeah.
So it's a clothing store. I'm the guy that when you walk in, I'm like, hi, good morning, can I help you?
Yeah.
And then people say no.
And
then when the person says no, you got to walk away from them and you got to go fold clothes.
Yeah.
Even if it's like a
therapeutic thing just to go.
No, dude, it was so bad because you folded everything, right?
Yeah.
But then they say, if there's no folding to do, unfold them and fold them again. I'm like, oh. So then, like, my only escape from folding and unfolding was to get a person to say, yeah, actually help me.
Yeah.
Then people go, no. Oh, gotta go fold those t-shirts again. And then it's like a person says no, and then they go through all the clothes, right? They take them off the rack, they unfold them, and then they're like, oh, no, thank you. I didn't really like any of them. But I know you were in the change rooms taking selfies and pictures to post on Facebook. To make like you've got a new outfit. And then I'm going to fold these clothes again. Ah, come on, man.
Oh, man. That was quite the life back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Sucks. So that means you probably have a really neat home right now. Like you fold everything.
Yeah. I don't have many clothes, but the few that I have, they're all folded. The same way that you would find clothes in the store folded.
Wow.
They're folded like that. It was drummed into me.
Yeah.
It was drummed into me. And also, I was in boarding school from the age of six.
From the age of six?
Yeah. What's that? Grade zero? I know class one.
Yeah, that is pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So, So, my whole kind of life has been molded into just like law and order kind of thing.
Wow.
You know? Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
I suppose that's why I was quite rebellious after school and got myself into so much trouble. Man, we just had a realization moment.
Yeah, like one of those aha moments.
Yeah, we had an aha moment. Thank you. Wow, was it?
So let's now rewind. Not a lot of kids start grade zero in boarding school. It's almost as if,
my parents didn't love me. Yeah, you're right, man.
Well, at least you said it.
Don't know what I did. Age of six. Okay, fine. I broke a few cups. Peed in bed a couple of times. Like, there's no reason.
Like, I've had enough. You're going to boarding school.
No, I'm six. Jeez, forgive me.
Yeah.
I can't control my bowel movements yet.
I'm sure it must not have been the easiest time. I mean, you hardly had a father figure, mother figure, involved in your life from the biological sense.
Yeah.
All that often.
Yeah. So the boarding school I went to was called Little Flower Eshowe in KZN.
Yeah.
And it was run by German nuns.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty weird.
Pretty efficient, I'm guessing.
Everything was on time, including the beatings. Dude, you have no idea. But my parents did it for a very good reason.
Yeah.
At that time, it was 1986. There were no Model C schools that black kids were allowed to go to.
Mm.
So this was the only school allowing and teaching in the Model C code. So that was the best school for me at the time.
Wow.
To start off in the Model C school.
Mm.
And lots of black people in KZN. Then, because they were accepting colored people,
mm-hmm.
not really blacks, but they were accepting colored people. So some black people changed their surnames, like from Tim Cool to Grootboom, those kind of things, you know.
And you went and got Trevor, just
Trevor. Yeah. So I didn't get visits from my friends in the hood because they come around and be like, hey, Trevor. No, guys, we are here now. It's Trevor.
It's Trevor.
Come on, guys.
Was on Kipe Balungu.
Yeah. So, it was for good reason.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who's ever started boarding school at that young of an age. I know normally people maybe started. Some people started primary school. I've heard of, let's say, grade 7 boarding school or grade 8. That's about 13, 14.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get my kids to boarding school too. Though.
Yeah.
It's rough, man.
Yeah.
They eat too much. No, they do. And I don't think it's fair, okay? Because now my wife and I, we divorced, so we don't live in the same house, okay?
Yeah.
And we don't have the same responsibilities and bills, okay? And these kids don't consider that when they're coming to raid my kitchen. It's like, just eat and get full at your mom's house. And when you come here... When you come here, you just drink oros and eat popcorn.
Drink oros and eat popcorn.
Yeah.
That is so convenient, right? Yeah. I mean, then there's no dishes.
Exactly. Well, I use paper plates.
You use paper plates?
Yeah. Whenever our company. By company, I mean... By company, I mean my kids.
Wow. Yeah.
'Cause you can't really host people and then expect them to wash the dishes. And I don't like cleaning up after people. So... Yeah. You know, it's easier now with the hip hop culture, you know, two plastic cups. You know, you give them that and they think, oh, this is so swaggy. No, I just don't want you using my glasses. You guys are going to break stuff.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Get the swag on.
Smart man. Yeah. Okay. So now let's say we now fast forward to, you know, boarding school kind of finished. And you were, you know, you were 18, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the first thing that happened is you got the job at YDE. Is that pretty much how it happened?
Yeah, pretty much. The boarding school, I went from when I was 6 years old, mm-hmm, till grade 5.
Yeah.
From grade 5, then I moved to Parkview and Morris Brothers, St. Mm. Henry's, which is so expensive. I only lasted a year there because of how expensive it was.
Ish.
Then we went to Parkview and then Glenwood Boys High. And then I was in a band in my matric year.
Oh.
With my stepbrother, DJ Spectacular. And we called ourselves the O31 and we did Kwai Rap.
Uh-huh.
And we were pretty cool. So my studies didn't go so well in matric. Yeah. And I thought I'd failed. So I got up at 4 a.m. You know the day the matric results come out in the newspaper?
Yeah.
On that day, at like 4 a.m., I was at Durban Station. I got onto a bus to Joburg because I thought I'd failed, you know. And then halfway at the Montrose stop where the bus stops, I got out and I called my mom. Mm. And she's like, oh, I see you packed all your things. I bought the paper. Your name's in here. You passed, so you can come back.
Wow.
And then I was like, I'm halfway to Joburg anyway. Let me see what the city can offer.
Wow.
Yeah. So I came here, I looked up my sister, stayed with her, and then started getting jobs. I worked at YDE, Hilton Wainer, mm-hmm, at Hyde Park, RJL in Westgate. And then my sister, who was a call center manager at MultiChoice, got me a job in the call center. That was my first call center experience.
Yeah.
From that one, I moved to Tracker, the Stolen Vehicle Recovery Systems. Then I worked for them. And then a couple of others. Oh, OutSurance as well.
Yeah.
I sold business insurance.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, quite a big deal, dude.
Yeah.
There's so much money in that. Mm. So much. Yeah. And then, yeah, that's how my working career started, from being a runaway.
Literally. Because, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. Your mom looks at your room and there's nothing. And she's like, I see you already. You ran away. You're a street kid already.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, you can come back.
Yeah. You know, but I don't think it hit her really hard that I ran away from home. She put me in boarding school at the age of 6. I don't think. Yeah. I don't think she was like, oh, my son's gone. It's like, oh, well, we can store pots in that room.
You know, I really am trying so hard to, you know, stay composed, not laugh at your life because so much of it is funny.
Bad.
But, you know, I think it's just you take out the humor out of it so easily and effortlessly. Maybe that's the actual thing.
You got to laugh at bad situations, man.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But there was a lot of love in my household. You know?
Yeah.
So we did things because of circumstance and not because of a certain way you feel about a person, you know? I come from a very close-knit family and a very loving family. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me, and then the journey went now, you are in this, you know, corporate working environment, call center vibes. What are some of those days where you were just like, you know what? I call this an aha moment. Tell me about that moment when you felt like, man, some days just feel like they're not worth it.
Every Monday and every Friday. I was on the verge of getting fired from every job I had because I just couldn't make it to work on a Monday. And on a Friday, I'm just like, oh, take your own phone calls.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was like when I first got a taste of entertainment was when I had an advert, and then that advert kind of blew up, and I thought, oh man, the sky's the limit, Hollywood, here I come, yeah. You know, and then I didn't get the jobs.
Oh no.
And I had to go back to a call center. Then I was working at Cell C. Dude, I was like, I'm not meant to be here. I'm a big star. What is this? I hate it here. And I just didn't take phone calls. Like, because you wear a headset and then the phone doesn't, like, you don't, like, pick up the phone. Yeah. It just comes into your ear because you've got an automated thing. Hi, this is Trevor. Thank you for calling Cell C. How can I help you? But that's pre-recorded.
Oh, what?
And then you just hear the person go, hi, hello, I need some. Shucks. I used to just sit there the whole day, like, and when I hear somebody's voice, I just, like, click hang up.
What?
I did that, dude, I did that every day for about 2 weeks. Every day for about 2 weeks up until the manager, like, said, okay, everybody, please get off your phones. I'd like to have a meeting, please. And in the meeting was about me and how he's firing me on the spot right there for what I did. And I think that was just after payday on a Thursday, because we got paid like weekly. And I'm like, okay, so what, I got to leave now? And he's like, yeah, you got to leave now. But I'm like, I put 20 rand in for lunch, but this guy, I'm like, okay, guys, can I have the 20 rand back? Then he's like, the guys are like, no, he's already gone to buy the Nando's. You're going to have to come back.
Wow.
Then it was just awkward. I was like, do I wait for lunch after being fired, or do I just leave on the spot?
What did you do?
I left, dude.
You left your 20 bucks?
Yeah. I was hungry too, man. So bad.
I mean, it's one thing to be fired, but to be fired and hungry?
Ah, man, you know? I didn't think about it like that. Now I'm jobless and hungry? Oh, man, I'm on the streets again. My mom's going to be so angry.
Oh, wow. And then from this, I mean, a lot of people that I've had on the show have said, yeah, you know, I used to do corporate and you do a little bit of entertainment at the same time until entertainment took off and then I left. Or they, you know, they talk about that one big gig and it felt like that's all they needed.
Mm.
And in your case, you saying that one gig came, or it looked like it was coming and it looked like this was it. Mm. And then all of a sudden, ololo tend to dololo.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then, yeah.
Yeah, I was pushed back down to earth, you know, pulled back down to earth quite harshly, because I was thinking, oh man, I've got the biggest ad out there, and I just didn't understand the industry, and I didn't understand how hard people work, and nothing's given to you, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't know that these actors go for auditions. I'm like, once you're on TV, they just give you work, you know? But you have to go and impress and be at auditions and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
And how did you get through that? I mean, so once someone hits the rock bottom and they feel like they're down in the dumps, what is some of, you know, your ways of coming back from setbacks?
Oh, dude, it's just like you fall down 7 times, you got to get up 8 times.
Yeah.
You know, no one's going to give you anything for free in this world, you know. You've got to do it. You've got to work, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody owes you favors. So you got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
I've always done things for myself, you know, and giving up is not an option, because if I do, then I've given up. And I've got kids looking up to me. So, you know, I got to make it work for them.
Yeah. So some people think that maybe the whole boarding school experience for you at such an early age, and not having, you know, your family around you from that early age, maybe turned your own heart a little bit cold to your own kids. Do you feel that you also don't know how to quite handle the whole being there for the kids, like, because maybe you didn't see that, or is it different for you?
Yeah, it's different for me. I didn't grow up with a father figure.
Yeah.
I was raised by a single mom, and I've always yearned for that father figure, and I promised myself that one day when I have kids, there will never, yearn for anything of that nature. So with my kids, I make the most time for them. I'm there for them, whatever, you know. All their sporting things, I'm there at galas and stuff. And I'd rather not be at a job than miss out on an important rugby match for them. Yeah. So my kids, maybe I smother them, maybe I don't, but I'm there for them always because I know what it feels like.
Yeah. Wow. And that's powerful. So many young people, especially young black people, grew up grew up without the family being there at these things. You're like, you know, we already know Chepu's mom is not, Chepu's mom is never there.
Exactly.
Chepu's dad is never there.
But you know why?
Always because needs to take a lift with somebody.
Yeah. But you know why? Because our parents didn't have the type of jobs that allow them to take the time off.
Yeah.
You know? My mother was a bank teller at Standard Bank for 26 years. And also, you can't just leave the bank and say, I'm going to go watch my kid, you know? And also not having a car and public transport. It takes a bus and two taxis to get to my school from the hood. It's difficult, you know?
Yeah.
So I remember when I was at Morris Brothers, I broke down the one time.
Yeah.
Because my mom didn't come to the school concert of it was the Pied Piper of Hamilton. And I was one of the rats. And I remember sitting there on the stairs looking out at all the parents and stuff. And like we were supposed to be doing a dance as the rats.
Yeah.
But then I just stopped and I was like looking around the hall to try to find my parents. And I didn't see them. And I just started crying. And
on stage.
Yeah, yeah. And the curtain closed and closed behind me. And a teacher from behind the stage had to come and get me off the stage.
Yeah.
Cause, but then, you know, I was young. I was probably 10 years old, you know. So I was like, Mom, why didn't you come? She's like, you know, like I see her, she's taking off her shoes, she's carrying food, you know, groceries for us. And I'm like, Trevor, don't be so selfish. This woman is doing everything to raise all these kids, you know. And you know how it is in the hood, man. It's like my mom took in other kids who were less fortunate than us, and we were less fortunate, you know. But rather, you know, everybody gets a small meal than, you know, than one person get a big meal kind of thing.
Yeah.
And after that, then I started to really empathize and with my mom and realize that the kids I go to school with don't live the same life I live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I can totally relate with you on that. You know, the upbringing and having parents that are breaking their back to put make ends meet, and having to sometimes take in other kids. And though there isn't much, you have to have one and a half slice. I don't know if people have had that half slice.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've never had a half slice.
Yeah, you don't know life.
You don't know life.
And half slice, Papa. Come on.
Half slice. Like, and seriously, that would be the thing. Like, you would go from having, you used to having four slices. Now you have two and a half slices because someone else has to also eat. And you have to share, even if it's that small, but you have to share it. And then, I mean, there comes that time in your life where you feel, Maramos Mona, nobody's looking out for me. Where's my parents? When Stefan's parents are always here, JP's parents are always here, and then you get that aha moment when you see that, hey man, but guys, wait a minute, man. But like, let me look at the whole picture. And we start to see exactly how much sacrifice is being put out there to make sure that we, you know, can still have a life and still be at least at a school, or in fact, wear some shoes that make you not look like you're that poor, and those type of things. So, yeah, man, that is some deep stuff right there.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And I think it's why it's a small taste of Ubuntu, you know?
Yeah.
That's where we get it from, because we've all struggled and we've all had these similar struggles, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely. And then that's pretty much one of the ways in which you can connect with people really quickly and really effortlessly is if you can share a struggle with them.
Absolutely.
I think that this probably works in comedy as well. If you can, if you have something that people resonate with, if you could say, you know that time when you're standing at the line and people are like, yes, man, because I go through that same thing. All of a sudden, people think that I, when I know Trevor, same WhatsApp group.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Interesting stuff, man. So now let's get into the big time. And how we started with the comedy journey led into presenting and more.
Ah, okay. That happened totally by mistake.
By mistake?
Yeah.
Interesting. Were you always the funny guy? Like
That's the thing. Uh-huh. Because we were drunk in Melville and we were passing Cool Runnings and one of the friends said, hey, Trevor, you a funny guy. You know, this comedy, just go do it. So drunk me, I was like, okay, fine, let's try it out.
Uh-huh.
Got on stage, did like a few minutes.
You got on stage drunk, did a few minutes.
Yeah, and then afterwards the guy was like, the host was like, all right, you've got something, give me a call. Then I did on the Monday, and he started managing me, and yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Then I started doing gigs properly and going for auditions, and that's how it started. Then I got that big Vodacom ad. And people started taking notice, and remember Darren Moore called me over to a show that he was presenting last day on Sunday for SABC, and he had me in doing some skits, and I was like, oh wow, I don't know about this life, what is all of this, you know? And he's like, yeah, this is it, this is how we do the show, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, I love it, can I try, you know? So then I was there, I was unemployed at the time, so like I went every day.
Yeah.
And just like fetching people coffee, fetching printouts, you know, trying to learn what this whole thing is.
Yeah.
And then like begging to write scripts, and they finally let me, my scripts were good, I acted in the skits that I wrote. Yeah, and it's just growing and trying to learn more things, and that journey, that giving of myself and not thinking I'm a big deal, has led to even producing TV shows like Sober Companion. Gumby Productions did that, and we won 5 SAFTA nominations for first drama. So, you know.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
The interesting thing that you mentioned in that journey was not thinking you're a big deal, and and having the, you know, that humility that was needed to say, no, I'll be the dude that fetches coffee. I'll be the dude that does printouts. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just the average Joe. Mm-hmm. And though there are a couple of big things that had already happened in your life here and there, but you still decided, you know what, it's okay. I'm willing to, you know, go back down to accepting the smaller tasks.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, I think really highly of myself, but for this particular role and for what I envision for myself in the future, I'm willing to sacrifice and start here.
Absolutely. Now,
tell me, during that time, fetching coffee and this and that, were you being paid for that?
No.
So now that makes it even deeper. You are unemployed, meaning that there's no money coming in.
Yeah.
But you're willing to say, for that, to just to be in that environment, I'm willing to sacrifice not having a lot of money, just so that I can be around the right people, learn the right things.
Absolutely.
And hopefully get into the right path.
Yeah. The only money I had coming in was from doing stand-up at night in clubs, you know?
Yeah.
And that doesn't pay much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like the passion grew for it, and I loved being there, you know? Others laughed at me and like, dude, you're always here. What are you doing? You're not even getting paid. Like, man, what else is there to do? I could be sleeping, but what am I going to get out of that? No?
Yeah.
And the thing is, I needed to learn the practical. I needed to learn on the ground, because my family didn't have money to send me to film school, to send me to acting classes, you know.
Yeah.
So I missed out on the whole varsity experience. But there's no one to blame for that, you know. So if I wanted to better myself, I needed to do that.
Wow.
Damn, you're taking me back, was it?
And this is what, you know why?
Yeah.
Because people like to always talk about where you fell, right? Instead of where you slipped. What I mean by that is, even if you fell in good fortune and you fell into a great career, but it is more about where you slipped than rather where you are right now. So for us to be able to replicate the Gumbi life one day, for someone listening to say, you know what, I'm exactly where he was 20 or 10 or 5 years ago, and I'm out here folding clothes, and this is not what I want to do with my life. I see myself producing big things on TV, but how do I do that? Well, Gumbi just told you that you go and you get unemployed, you go and sacrifice your time doing things for free, and you soldier it through, you do some peace jobs on the side, you swallow your pride, and that's how he got where he got. And that's why I had to take you back.
Damn, you're so profound, dude. Love the cadence of your voice. You should actually narrate porn.
What the hell?
I think you do such a great job.
What?
You've got that voice. It's like Ann Mandingo strikes it balls deep into the pretty blonde girl.
No. Stop. It's a family show.
Oh, is it? Oh, my bad. Sorry, Ma.
Okay. All right. But,
I'm always going to be so angry at me listening to this. You know what the beauty of like growing up poor and having lots of people in the house?
Yeah.
It's like if your mom gets angry, you can't get grounded. You can't be like, go to your room. Like, where? It's my name.
It's not like, my room, it's our room.
Yeah, because you go, okay, go to your room. There's three other people you can chill with. There is no naughty corner.
Grounding naughty corner.
There's no like, go pee by yourself.
In fact, if you grew up in the rural, I mean, my grandfather, he still lives in the huts and those type of vibes. Mm. He can't even say, go to the naughty corner.
I'm around.
Let's place around. You know? All they can say is, I'm not like, in our bed.
Yeah.
That's all they can say. Pretty interesting. So
right.
I want to now zoom into that life of being a comedian. And obviously, you got a big show coming up. And I want you to just tell me about this comedy journey. You started off doing some things. Well, you've started off drunk. You did the first you did the first thing. It started picking up. You started getting more bookings. What do comedians do, actually? Like, how do you become a professional comedian?
Just stage time, I think.
Yeah.
If you want to be a professional comedian, you just got to get on stage and do comedy. There's no degree or piece of paper that can say, now I'm officially a stand-up comedian. No.
Yeah.
It's getting onto a stage and performing. What stand-up comedians do, we observe.
Mm.
For as much as we are loudmouth on stage, it's because we are loudmouth because we've observed. Observing society. Excuse me. Observing society, politics, whatever it is that sparks an interest in you and you want to engage on that topic, you know. You've got to be pretty well read and pretty well versed on the topic to speak about it openly in public, you know. So comedians, as foolish as we may look, we are pretty intelligent, well read people. I choose to do comedy about myself and my life because I'm not well read and intelligent. No. I choose to do comedy about myself because it doesn't sound like anybody else's comedy.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody can steal my jokes or you know, because it's my life.
Yeah.
You know? We said earlier that we've all had similar struggles. Like if you're growing up black, if you're between the ages of 25 and 40, you basically grew up in the hood, and certain things that happen in the hood have happened to other people. You could have grown up in Khayelitsha and another person grew up in Soweto. Both of you will have the same experiences as a person who grew up in Guamash. You know, so sometimes when comedians are on stage, it sounds like they're doing the same joke, but it's not. It's just like that's
life.
Yeah, that's their experiences, you know. So yeah, you also got to watch for that.
Yeah, cool. And your latest is about your life. I mean, your latest content that you're gonna be coming
absolutely
out. And it's all about a really sensitive topic, some would think.
Sensitive to who?
Exactly.
Exactly, man. It's the divorce tour, you know?
Yeah.
It's the 4th of November at Silver Star Casino. Tickets are at Compu Ticket for 185 Rand. And I'm talking about relationships. I'm talking about breakups, makeups, love, sex. How I describe the show in itself, it's a love story. My wife and I have split. We've been together for 17 years, married for 11 of those. And you can't hate a person after you've been through that much and wow. had two kids, you know. So yeah. it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. And I'm just expressing that, you know, people who are madly in love with one another, things can go wrong if you don't take care of the relationship.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. If right. you don't take care of the relationship, that's...
Yeah, it's not taking care of another person. It's yeah. taking care of the relationship. There are certain things that you need to keep going and change and fix. It's like it's like if you drive a car without ever taking it for service, it will break down.
Wow. Hey, man, that was some wise counsel right there. Because, you know, it's so scary to hear of someone who's been married for like 10, 17 years. That's like a long time. It's some people's lifetime that, you know. And and then to still have, you know, have you'd think that maybe after the first 5 years, people think that, no, if there was any differences, then they would notice maybe in the first 3-5 years. And after that time, I know that's the same person, man. Like, I'm sure by now they figured it out and they figured this life thing out. And do you think people stay longer because they trying to tolerate, or it actually they did figure it out until a certain point where it was just not coming together anymore?
Yeah, people stay together for the wrong reasons. Sometimes it's financial stability, sometimes it's children, but people need to realize that you can't stay with the same person for a long time without accepting their changes. You were not the same person you are today 5 years ago, and in another 5 years you're not going to be the same person. You know, things change, your ideals change, your passion, your interests change, and that's something that I didn't take into account with my wife. You know, I just was the same old person, but she was growing immensely, and I wasn't picking up the slack to say, okay, fine, we have different interests, you know. I was still clubbing when she was like, let's form a book club. You know what I mean? I was like, no, I'm in the club, popping bottles with these bitches. She's like, no, let's book club. I'm like, is that the same as taboo? Because look, it's popping out here. What's book club? I ain't never heard of book club. Can we get VIP in book club? How much the bottles at book club?
And they're like, there's only bottles of Valpray and book club.
Exactly. I'm like, it's boring ass club.
Yo, wow. And that's some interesting stuff. I'm sure that right there is just you know, a tiny taste of what we can expect, obviously, with the divorce tour in itself.
Absolutely.
Things that we can look forward to in the divorce tour. You're saying that, I mean, there's stories about, you know, the actual relationship itself.
Yeah.
Things about kids, maybe. Just give us a taste of, guys, here's what you must look forward to, because Trevor Gumbi is back.
Look forward to a very candid Trevor and a very honest. It's going to be one of the most honest shows I've ever done. And it's... far less depressing than what my life is. It's I've found the funny in things, you know. Never give up. It's enjoyable, you know.
Yeah
come through, watch the show, it's gonna be great.
Pretty cool. So Trev, now we are in that last you know, that last comment section where you just have to, you know, just, if you had to share some words of encouragement, there's someone out there who is folding some clothes right now. They're not quite in the job that they want to be. They're like, I mean, which year was that, Trevor? Like, is that like 02 Trevor? Is that
2000? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Trevor of the year 2000. They're pretty much in the same place, and you saying, guys, 2017 Trevor is talking to 2000 Trevor now and saying, here's some basic tips on life. What would you say?
I'd say risk it all. Take every chance you can get. don't focus on what doesn't make you happy. If you've got that job, cool, keep that job, but find out things about what interests you the most. If you are a keen cyclist, just go hang out at bike shops, hang out at races. Find out. Knowledge is key, and just take all the chances you can get. Like, if I'm talking to 20-year-old Trevor, I'll be like, take every chance you can get. Mm. You'll fail, but just keep getting up.
Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Brother, thank you very much for coming through. This has been very insightful and inspirational at the same time. I don't know if you've ever thought of yourself as an inspirational character, but but when we listen to the story in itself, there's quite a lot of inspiration in it. One thing that I'm getting out of this is never undermine or underestimate that dude that just hanging out. You know that there's that one dude that's always just hanging out. He's here. Yeah, nobody's paying him to be here. He's just trying to learn, observe, and be around you guys so that he can learn some stuff. Never underestimate that dude, because you never know where that dude is going with his life.
Absolutely.
Absolutely fantastic. Brother, thank you so much for coming through yet again, the shortest hour of the week. It has already been an hour. Do you realize that we've been chatting for about an hour?
Okay, cool.
Told you it's the shortest hour of the week.
Yeah. Let's go to book club.
All right, right after this, me and Trevor are going to book club. Thank you very much for listening in. This is the Unplugged and In Charge Radio Show. Until next time.
This is CliffCentral.com.